Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Now ask me anything. Michael Dawson is with me in studio today. Michael is a music conductor and composer. Good afternoon. How are you?
Delighted to be here, Andrea.
Thanks for coming into us. You might just explain, first of all, what it is you do, what your day-to-day job is.
So since I came back from America, I've got a couple of day-to-day jobs. But I've trained as a conductor for the last 15, 16 years, worked as a conductor. And here in Ireland, I work at the Irish Institute of Music and Song, which is an institute in North Dublin in Balbriggan, which I set up about 5 years ago. And I also work at the Lark Concert Hall, which is a brand new state-of-the-art venue in North County Dublin in Balbriggan. And I also work at Maynooth University, where I conduct the University Chamber Choir there as well.
All right, okay. So, like, as a conductor, I presume your own background is in as a musician yourself?
Yeah, exactly. I started playing piano at the age of 6. Then I got into Irish traditional music, played the bagpipes, played in a rock band, played lots of Irish traditional music, and then eventually kind of fell into conducting, almost by accident.
Is that a different skill set?
It is indeed, yeah. So typically, if you're a musician, you've got to be an absolute expert at your craft if you want to make a living in it.
Mm.
For a conductor, you need to be an expert at your craft, but you need to have a much broader knowledge of musical terms, how to lead a group of people, because generally, half of the job, or even more than half the job, is actually just leading people in a very short amount of time towards a common goal. And trying to get them on side, trying to encourage them, give them nuggets about the music they're performing and make it meaningful so that they feel the meaning of the music and therefore the audience will then feel the meaning as well.
Yeah. The hold hand gestures and all that goes with conducting a choir or orchestra, is that performance or required? Or
do you know what's so interesting? Like, the art of conducting really is quite a new thing. It only existed in the last 200 years. Originally, way back in like the 1700s and 1600s, there was no conductors really.
Okay.
It was basically a guy would stand at the front of a group of people and he'd have a big stick and he'd bang the stick on the ground, sometimes obnoxiously, to keep everyone in time. And it was really when orchestras, choirs got bigger, really in the Romantic era, kind of Beethoven and afterwards, that the orchestras were so big, you couldn't just have the violinist at the front lead the group. You needed to have someone at the front to lead
them. Manager.
Like a manager, exactly, exactly like that. And I think the thing that people don't realize about conducting is when you see a conductor on stage, you're seeing the final product. So you're seeing that one moment, that one capture of a piece being performed, but you don't see the many rehearsals that happen before that.
Mm.
And that is really, to me, where the art of conducting comes in. It's how do you take a group of people, it could be 100 people in an orchestra, it could be 30 people in a choir, and in usually not enough time, because there's never enough time, move them towards a performance that can be meaningful to an audience.
Okay. 087 1400 106. That's the WhatsApp number. We have this voice note in from Matthew.
What's a typical day like for you when you're getting ready for a concert?
So what's the typical day like?
That is a great question. There's what's the typical day that I'd like it to be like and what's it actually end up like. So first, typically if I've got a concert on in the evening, the first thing I'll try and do in the morning is look at my music. So see what's happening and try and plan out what's going to happen. If it's an orchestral concert, I'll start studying the score more, maybe spend about an hour, hour and a half, just remind myself of the various things that have to happen. But then typically there's so many things that happen during the day, you end up doing other stuff throughout the day to that had nothing to do with conducting. So you study the score, go on, have lunch, etc. But usually before the performance, I like peace, quiet. If I'm working with choirs and amateur choirs, they like to yap and talk before the rehearsals or before the concert. So we try and keep everything nice and mellow so that people can get their heads in the right place.
Do you have a conductor for a choir? Is that separate to being a conductor for an orchestra, or is it all the one?
It's the same. It's the art of conducting. It's the same. There are techniques that are different between the two because you're playing a different instrument. So
okay.
With an orchestra, you're playing loads of different instruments and you have to try and bring them together. And with a choir, you're playing the human voice and they both have their unique challenges.
We've this voice note from Sarah.
Hi, Michael. What is the difference between a conductor and a composer?
Ah, yes. The amount of times people will say composer for conductor. So the conductor is a person that stands in front of a group and brings them together. Actually, the word conductor comes from conducare, which basically means to bring people together. So they lead the music, pull everything together and keep the show on the road in the performance. Composers, on the other hand, they're the creative people that come up with the music. So composers sometimes will take a text or they'll take some melodies and they'll turn it into a big piece of music, a symphonic piece of music or a small art song. Or sometimes they'll take poetry and they'll write melody to poetry and then put instruments with it. So composers are the ones that create the music and conductors help bring it together for performance.
So they're two separate jobs then, are they?
They're two separate jobs.
But typically, would you tend to do both?
There's a lot of really famous people who have done both. Like Bernstein, for example, there was a movie about Leonard Bernstein recently. He was both a composer and a conductor. There's actually a really funny story. A person called Jean-Baptiste Lullet, who was a conductor and composer. And when he was conducting his own performance, this is back in the late 1600s, he had a big stick and he would conduct by just slamming the stick on the ground. This was before conducting got a little bit refined. And he ended up stabbing himself in the foot.
Oh, God.
And he gave himself gangrene.
Stop.
And he refused to get his leg chopped off because he loved dancing. And he ended up dying from conducting.
So it can be a dangerous
job. It's very dangerous, yeah.
Shauna has sent in this question.
Hi, Michael. I just want to ask, do you have to play an instrument to become a conductor?
Great question. It helps significantly if you play an instrument to become a conductor. The most important thing is you need to understand how the instruments work and how you can get different sounds out of instruments. Like, for example, with the violin, if you play higher up on the bridge, you're going to get a warmer, mellow sound. But if you play closer down the bridge, you're going to get a much more bright sound. So different music requires kind of different sounds and different colors. And if you understand how the instruments work, then you can, you've got a much greater palette of colors to play with.
I just would have assumed you'd have to like at least be able to play one instrument exceptionally well.
Yeah, typically you do. I know one conductor who's amazing over in America, Troy Quinn, and he actually doesn't play any instruments at all. He's a singer. But he's exceptionally, he's so well read, understands the instruments backwards. It makes realistically, if you can't play piano, you're going to struggle significantly as a conductor, because if you get new music that's never been played before, there's no recordings, there's nothing, you need to hear what that music's going to be like. So if you play piano, then you can play that and understand the music before you actually go to perform it.
Ina wants to know.
Hi, Michael. How do you control the timing of each instrument and what happens if someone misses their cue?
Oh, Aina, we were just talking about this with Andrea beforehand. So this is the big question. And this is the thing that most people understand conducting to be. It's keeping time. So different time signatures have different gestures. So for example, if something is in 4-4, that means there's four beats in every bar. So typically like a march, you would go 1-2-3-4, 1-2, think most songs you've ever heard, right? And if it's in 4-4, your gesture would look a certain way. If it goes into 3-4, that means there's three beats in a bar. And most of us here in Ireland know that as waltz. So 1-2-3, 1-2-3. So it starts with conducting the right gesture.
Right, teach me.
Right, let's go. We do 3-4-4-4. Are you feeling like
We'll
go with a waltz. Brilliant. So for a waltz, you typically draw a triangle. If anyone's listening now for the crack, you might as well join in. So if you put your hand in front of you, kind of up in the air, and go down to the left, and that's 1 and stop. And then go over to the right, that's 2 and stop. And then go back up, that's 3. So if you click, say, it'll help. So if you go 1, then over to the right, 2, then up, 3, and then down, left 1, and right 2, and 3, and left, and right, and then that's your
my clicks are all over the place here. So what's my left hand doing while I'm doing this?
You can either copy your right hand, or...
Oh God, no, hang on.
Right. Or just like Aina's questions there, what happens if people miss a part? The left hand is often how you show people when they're coming in. So with the right hand, you keep the rhythm to show people what the pulse is, and the left hand then should be freed to go... Come on in, Andrea. Now's your chance to sing. Let's go.
Right, yeah, okay.
And you cue with your left hand. So you'll be conducting with your right hand, doing the gesture, and then maybe 1, 2, 3. Now, Andrea, sing.
Yeah, nobody. We don't want to lose the listeners,
I'm not talking about the conductor.
Okay, so that's what you're using. This is for directions, the laptop.
Exactly, bringing people in and controlling dynamics as well. And it's very simple. It's kind of like, it's just a human thing. If you put your hand out, and if you're singing, and I literally bring my hand down, you know that that means...
Shut up.
Pretty much, yeah. And if I go up, that means get louder.
087-1400-106, the WhatsApp number. If you have a question for conductor and composer Michael Dawson this afternoon, Declan has sent in this question.
Hi, Michael. Do you have a favourite piece of music that you've conducted, and why is it your favourite?
Oh my God. I have so many favourite pieces of music. There is a wonderful piece by Aaron Copland. Actually, no. I'm going to stick with choral. There's an amazing choral piece called Tonight Eternity Alone by an American composer called René Clausen. And I think I've got an emotional attachment to it because it was a piece I did at the time in my life, maybe about 12, 13 years ago, and when I was conducting in the Munich University Chamber Choir. And I ended up performing, it was a big part, we went on tour, toured all around the world with the piece, and we ended up performing it at my mom's funeral.
Oh, gosh.
It's one of these beautiful texts that I think the composer has like captured beautifully, and it kind of has a very deep, deep meaning to for me.
Yeah.
So Tonight Eternity Alone by René Clausen.
I went to see André Roux.
Yeah, André Roux.
In the Three Arena last year. It was absolutely incredible. So I presume he's an example now of conductor-composer.
Okay, this is a great example of like, do we need a conductor or not?
Yeah.
Because people will say, well, can an orchestra work without a conductor? And actually, like oftentimes they can work without a conductor. And in my opinion, if you can do it without a conductor, well, it's even better because you take away this obstacle, this person in front, and now the orchestra are all performing out to the audience. And André Roux, typically, he will conduct from the violin. So he'll stand up and he'll let them know when to come in, when to come off. He'll control the dynamics. So it means the show then is really, really captivating.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Because all the performers are performing out to the audience.
And he plays the violin himself.
Yeah, at times too. Yeah, no, he's fantastic.
It was one of the most remarkable gigs I've ever been at, where actually the first, I'd say, first, second and third row of the audience, and there was a lot of, I suppose, you know, older age demographic there, they all got up and started waltzing around. It was unbelievable.
What's amazing about him is he's provided a bridge for people into classical music, because I think there's this idea sometimes that classical music is elitist, and I think for a time in Ireland it was quite elitist. But now, really, since in the last 20 years, there's amazing productions. Irish National Opera do them. There's performances all around the country that now are really for everyone. I think André Roux and video game music and film music, John Williams and Danny Elfman, these people have helped bring classical music and orchestral music to the masses.
Now, Marcin in Galway is wondering, what's the difference between classical conducting and musical theatre conducting?
Classical conducting, you typically stand in front and the conductor typically won't play any instrument. Their job is literally to conduct the orchestra, to prepare the orchestra, etc. For music theatre production, like for example, we do a panto at the Lark Concert Hall, and the guy that runs the panto, Sean Gilligan, he will conduct from a keyboard because he'll have an orchestra in front of him, but it'll be a music theatre orchestra, and sometimes it's made up of violins and guitars and drums, and he'll actually play the piano. So he'll conduct from the piano. A lot of nods, a lot of winks, a lot of elbows.
Okay.
And do it that way.
Claire wants to know.
Hi, I have a question for Michael. How long does it take to prepare for a show? Does it take a lot of preparation?
Yeah, so if the music is hard, it can take an enormous amount of preparation. Like, for example, if I'm getting ready for September to June, my season, I'll plan all the music during the summer and I'll start learning the music during the summer so that when I step into the first rehearsals in September, I'm prepared. I know everything that's happening. I know who's singing what, who's performing what. I've got a deep understanding of the music. And it's actually not just understanding the harmony and the music and analysing it. It's actually understanding the context. Like, why was this music written? Was it written for a special occasion?
Yeah.
What's the meaning behind it?
We have a final voice note from Liam.
Hi, Michael. For people who don't usually listen to classical music, what's a good way to start enjoying it?
Film music. I think like films have, like we have emotional attachments to films. And I think oftentimes when we feel we don't listen to classical music, we do and don't even realize we do because we've seen the movie The Mission and heard Ennio Morricone's score, or we've seen Star Wars and heard John Williams' score.
There's a brilliant documentary about him on Disney that I watched.
A new one, yeah.
Oh, it's unbelievable, yeah.
But like that I think that's the best way. And I think once people realize that that is classical music, the name is kind of funny. Like classical.
It is a bit off-putting, I suppose.
Yeah, it is.
Now, listeners wondering, can you kindly ask Michael which film movie score he'd love to have composed? The Mission, E.T. or Pale Rider?
Oh, The Mission. Every time I watch The Mission, I cry. Every single time. I think it's one of the most beautiful scores ever written. And I think when he steps into the jungle and you hear the choir singing, I just think that is one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written. It's incredible.
You'd be very impressed. Now I'm going to London this weekend to see Westlife at the Royal Albert Hall with the Philharmonic Orchestra.
Oh, wow.
For the first time. So you might be able to answer this question that I've been wondering today. Like, will the audience be allowed to sing away to Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, will we?
Yeah.
Because someone else told me we wouldn't.
No, absolutely. Do you know what's so funny? Like, back in the day, back in the 1800s and even early 1900s, the audiences actually sang along with stuff that happened in the orchestra. Like, they would actually be playing cards or they'd be talking in the middle of it and then they'd just tune in during the big songs.
And what's the difference? Like, what does the Philharmonic Orchestra mean? Is that just a type of...
It's a size of orchestra. So you can have chamber orchestra, you can have Philharmonic Orchestra. So a chamber is a smaller orchestra and a Philharmonic Orchestra is a big orchestra.
I'm going to sound like I'm really in the know now, aren't I, over the weekend when I'm talking about this. Michael, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a million for coming in to answer listener questions today. Michael T. Dawson there, as we said, conductor and composer.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.